Let's go ahead and get started. It's a couple minutes after the hour. Appreciate everyone that has tuned in. So we have a special guest. We're excited about our session, our roundtable this time, and we're going to be talking all about sales. We'll be covering everything from the different sale types to different sale materials to different experiences that we've had using our sales, and it should be good. The important part I want to point out, and we'll get into it, is this is a very open format. So if you have any questions as we go through the different topics, feel free to either raise your hand, somehow get our attention, or also just send a message using the Zoom message meeting chat, and we'll be able to get to your questions and have you ask them. So let's go ahead and let me see if I can get my screen working here. Okay. So we're going to go through the panel members. I will do the intro for Pedro on the next slide, since we have a lot to talk about with Pedro. Mark, do you want to do a quick intro on you?
Sure. I'm Mark. I'm owner of Serenity. It's called 4434, vintage 2010. We took ownership of her in December of 2010, which seems like ages ago, and have been sailing up and down the West Coast as liveaboards. So we love the boat. We love our in-mast furling system, and we'll talk more about that later.
That sounds great. And of course, I'm Mark Silverstein. I'm on My Antares. We are all the way over in Malaysia, Penang, Malaysia. It's an island, and we also live on board. We've been on board full-time. We're 2011 Antares, so we're barely a year newer than Mark's boat. And it's Christmas season, so you can see behind me, we did a lot of decorations last night, so our whole boat now is Christmas trees up, lights are up, so we feel like we're actually close to at home. Okay, well, let's go through, and let me just introduce our special guest. So this is what makes this whole session so good, because we have an actual expert who is here to discuss everything about sales and answer as many questions as we have time for. But just some background on Pedro. So he is from Argentina, and he started making sales in 1976 in Argentina. And he actually is also childhood friends with Memo, who is the owner of Fortigratos Sur, the builder of Antares Catamaran. So they go way back all the way to Argentina. Pedro since was given an offer to go to UK Sailmakers. He's based in Houston, Texas now. Has been there since 1987. So Pedro has, I think he was telling me that he is one of the longest standing sailmakers within the UK system. He's been there for a very long time. He's received tons of different awards for his sail designs. He has designed sails for the Argentinian, Ecuadorian, and Uruguayan navies. And most importantly to us on the call and those listening in, he has designed the sails for the Antares catamarans and has a wealth of knowledge to dig into. So, Pedro, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you taking the time to answer our questions.
No, just a little bit. Thank you for invite.
Yeah, thank you, Pedro. Oh,
thank you. Anything else for inviting me.
Oh, you're okay. More than welcome. Anything else that I missed, Pedro, that you want to add about your background?
No, it's fine. It's showing making sales. That's it.
Yeah, you make good sales, and we'll learn a lot from you. So just to reiterate the format for the roundtable, just raise your hand or ask a question in the meeting chat as these topics come up. At the very end, there'll be a general open session for Q&A. So if you don't have a question that's specific to anything we're talking about, but you still would like to ask Pedro some questions, feel free to stand by, and we'll do that at the end of the presentation. So our first topic I wanted to jump into and discuss is this whole concept of cruising versus racing sails. And we hear about this a lot. I know that when I'm sail shopping for my boat, I was trying to figure out what type of sail. Do I need a cruising sail? Do I need something that's between cruising and racing sail? So we tried to go through and divide this up into four main categories: material, design, cost, and durability. And I'm going to ask Pedro some questions here. Pedro, what's been your experience in making sails? We talk about sail material and the difference between cruising and racing sails, and in particular, what you see people are purchasing for cruising catamarans. What's your advice and experience around this concept of cruising versus racing sails?
Well, today the Dacron and cruising laminate improve a lot and allowing to make radial sails, which are better for the durability, keeping the shape. Racing sails are more laminate. You want to avoid weight. You want something only for one day. So the durability, the terms of shape and material is much less than the cruising sails, because they are only oriented on not stretch and weight.
Yeah.
But all this technology from racing today came a lot to the cruising sails, allowing good material like the he created a good Dacron for radial sails, a good laminate with the Dyneema fibers inside, allowing a big performance sail for cruising and save a good weight, right? So that is a good thing, right?
Okay. So what you're saying then, Pedro, is that over time that the cruising material that you would typically have on a cruising sail has advanced a lot because of some of the advancements, I'm guessing, in technology that they've used for racing sails with some of the more of the laminates with the different types of material?
There are many options today. Yeah, there are many options on materials.
Yeah. A question on materials that I have, and that's just the whole durability piece. I know we have that as a bullet point, but with laminates, one of the fears that I think, not fears, but concerns that I've seen, I've experienced this with my laminate sails, is that after 5 years, they were definitely delaminating. Has technology changed? And that was my original sails I had. They were North Norlam sails. They lasted about 5-6 years, and then they started to peel off and
change a lot.
It changed a lot since then.
Today is seven to eight years. Seven depends also how to use, but it's about 7 to 8 years.
Okay.
With cruising laminate.
Okay.
So, Dacron is 20-year sail, but lose the shape, and also you have a lot of weight on the sail.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, anybody have any questions? Mark, how about you to add about what's your experience been on your boat with your sails and your sail material?
Yeah, we had to replace our screecher in short order, and Pedro helped us with that, and we're very happy with the choice that we made in terms of the taffeta material. We recently replaced our mainsail. I had to go through all these questions that you asked in terms of, you know, what's the best material, what's the balance between performance, weight, and durability. And we came to the conclusion that that at least for us, going with the cruising type sail and material is preferable, because we're in it for the long haul, and we want something that will last longer. Of course, you know, anytime you're out in the water and there's another boat, you wish that your inventory was better performing. That's just the nature of the beast, and my ego at least. But on the whole, we're happy with sticking with the cruising side of the equation. Although we have a pretty big inventory of sails, so we have a Genoa Screecher, a mainsail, and for the downwind we have an asymmetric and a parasailer, so we've got quite a bit of versatility.
Yeah, that sounds great. So Pedro, a question for you, and that's just in talking about design of sails and the way that you design a cruising sail versus a racing sail. I mean, there's definitely an upwind performance issue that a racing boat has, because roughly half of their time they're going up course into the wind, and you don't have, I mean, most cruisers try not to sail to the wind any more than they have to. But is there anything that you specifically would do differently for a cruising design than a racing design sail for a catamaran?
Not too much. We designed the sail on terms of shape for the best performance, even racing or cruising.
Yeah.
Except some special sails, like screechers or something. But the main and the Genoa, I designed to go the best performance of wind, even if you're racing or not racing. Okay. More the difference on the racing and cruising is what material you choose for the sail, basically. Yep.
Okay, mm-hmm. So it really comes down to a material, decision on cruising versus racing, and not so much design because cool.
Well, the material also affect the design. You okay. don't design the same sail for a Dacron than a laminate.
Okay.
Are different on the design because the stretch of the materials are different. But
okay.
But basically, all the time we're thinking on the best performance.
Okay.
For the boat.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we also talked already briefly about durability. So Dacron sails can last up to 20 years, you said, and. Now, I guess with the new racing and new laminates, they'll last 5 to 7, at least.
They're coming very nice. They'll last 5-6 years, especially.
Okay, well, very that's good nice. To know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good segue into just talking a little bit more about the different types of sail material that's out there, and we'll talk specifically about the options of sail material that that UK sailmakers offers for the Antares, but. Do you want to just talk a little bit, Pedro, about the Dacron sails as they exist today? Because they come in all different sorts of weave. So I gave two examples. One is the AP low aspect. And I know that Hydronet is a popular choice amongst cruisers. I know a number of Antares owners have the Hydronet mainsail. What's your comment on the Dacron sails today?
Well, the Hydronet is not Dacron. It's Dynema.
Oh, it's not.
Material.
Oh. Okay.
No. Well, it's mixed with Dacron a little bit with polyester, but that's the reason because it's very expensive. The Hydronet is the material for radial sails or crosscut, but it's all based on Dynema material inside. So
okay.
It's good for. Be a 45, 50 footer boat and but end up on very expensive sail.
Okay. Because the Hydronet's
long durability. Yes, correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Now the Dacron today basically have two kind of construction. One for crosscut, which is a low aspect or high aspect. And another Dacron today created by all the companies, very good for radial sail, for warp oriented, for radial sail, for radial cut, which make you a much better sail than the cross cut.
Okay, so it depends on the type of a panel layout that you're doing for a sail.
Correct.
And it depends on the type of weave that you would use on a Dacron sail. It's very important based on stretch, I'm guessing.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
and also the good thing on the radial cut for the Dacron, you can combine different weights. You can put more weight on the leech, less weight on the front, for example.
Okay. So you actually can change the different material
you can mix.
As you're building the sail.
You can mix
it up.
Different materials, allowing much better sail. Mm-hmm.
So you make tons of sails at UK Sailmaker. How many, roughly as a percentage, do you think are Dacron sails? Are a lot of them Dacron? I mean, I know that you have different, you can do different material that's woven into the Dacron, but are most people getting some form of Dacron sail, I'm guessing?
No, there are many. I don't know exactly. Still, the Dacron is the more quantity of sails.
Okay.
And the laminate, cruising laminate, a lot.
Yeah.
And then we have the X-Drive system like that we use on the screecher for the Antares, which
okay.
is total laminate sail. You know?
Okay. Well, we'll keep moving then and talk next about nylon, because nylon is used But it's only used in certain types of sails. Can you talk a little bit about nylon and why it's used in particular for spinnakers?
Well, because it's pretty light,
Okay.
And you have a couple of different weight, but you're talking about 1.5 ounces, 2 ounces, or 3/4 ounces, and that you cannot go in a wind with a sail of that material because it stretches too much and collapse. Yeah. Right. So.
Right.
But it's for spinnakers, asymmetricals. So even for code zero, we use a heavier material and laminate material for them.
Okay, so
which is this more is not reaching used. Sail.
Okay, more of a reaching sail, which kind of gets into this next piece, which is sails that use aramid fibers. It's lightweight, low stretch. It is
that is the egg drive. That the egg drive construction, correct. You can see on the drawing, that we use for the X-ray construction.
Yeah, so I have a question, and just using this example that we have here from UK Sails on this sail, are you putting the layer of the aramid fibers on top and then laminating that on is that a Dacron skin below, or what type of skin is that usually? No, okay.
It's laminate, okay. film laminate.
Yep.
Some we taffeta one side, and on the shining side we put the carbon fiber structure
okay.
on top.
All right. And is that done actually in-house? Do you do that actually in your loft?
Yeah, well, we finish on the loft. We have in UK Chicago have the machine for lay out the fiber because.
Okay.
We use a machine to put the tapes. The fiber go from corner to corner.
Okay.
Doesn't have any cut, the fiber.
It's continuous.
It's continuous, correct.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that's for strength.
Yes, correct. And also the same, more or less the same system for the titanium construction, which is next step up.
Okay.
Which is a process with oven, etc. More complex than this, but that is for racing sake.
Okay, so we'll get into the other sails that you have, but what's the big difference then between like an aramid fiber and the ultra PE or the Kevlar? It's a similar concept, right? Is there a big difference? Is there a big difference in cost? Why would you use one and not the other?
Well, the ultra PE is the same material for the ultra piece, the HydraNet material, the same fiber.
Okay.
Is the old Dynema material. The Kevlar is an aramida, it's another fiber.
Okay.
The good thing with the ultra piece is very good for the UV resistance.
Okay.
If you can see the lines for the Dynema lines, the durability is a lot. Mm.
Okay.
Even the thread for stitching umbrella, we use ultra P fiber.
For doing the umbrella stitching, like for a sail cover, or for like
yes,
the UV or UV protection.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that gets us into the big conversation that I wanted to have you talk to us about, and I know that some people on this call are looking at buying new sails, and they're all different types of you know, sail material that is offered at UK Sails. Can you kind of walk us through what you offer and why someone might want to choose one versus the other?
Well, yes. Here you have the titanium double taffeta or simple taffeta. The titanium is double taffeta because it's a process with an oven. That is a racing sail.
Okay.
It's a light sail. The lamination on this material is not more than 2-3 years. So, and it's very expensive.
Okay.
The X-ray taffeta is the material, taffeta or without taffeta. The X-ray can do without taffeta. We move the screecher for Antares without taffeta now.
Okay.
Which a low better weight, a little lighter. That is a very nice construction, and it's a patent from UK. Okay. And it's and the durability is a lot. It's seven years sale. Then next step down is the radial. The feta is what it is. Well, it could be the HydraNet radial, could be Dacron radial, or could be using laminate material also. The good thing here is that you can combine different weights on the sail according to the stretch of the sail, and that make a very durable sail. This is 10 years sail minimum.
Okay. So, a question for you, Pedro, just real quick, so that people can, and myself included, can better understand when taffeta is what, a backing that's
yeah,
you know, heat applied or glued somehow. Correct. It's heat pressed.
The taffeta is a very light, skinny glue on the material.
It okay.
Can be on the roll on both sides, or yep, that is a construction for the cruising material, okay, or one side. Or,
yep.
But it's on a protection for the film. The film is inside.
Okay, so it's a protection. Does that
it's protect a protection
from UV? Is it a UV protection?
Yes,
or no?
It's high UV. It's not UV like the UV cover of a sail, but it's UV protected.
Okay.
Today have a very high time.
So anything that says taffeta is some sort of it's part of a lamination process, correct?
Correct.
Okay, got it. So it's still some form of a laminate if it has taffeta on it, and then
it's very light material glue on the laminate. Yes.
Okay. So if we look specifically at the radial taffeta, and radial is the type of cut, correct?
Correct.
And so can you explain what it means for a radial cut for those that don't understand enough, myself included, about the different types of way you might cut the sailcloth for a mainsail?
No, but the radial, the important part of the radial material is the direction of the fiber. You direct the fiber on the stretch direction.
Okay.
So, and that's the reason, because on the clue you have all the panels going that direction, and the same on the tack, and on the laugh, and on the head. Plus, the combination that I can put, for example, 10 ounces or 8 ounces material on the leech, but on the laugh, I can put 7 ounces, for example.
Okay.
That allow you more calibrate the weight of the sail, not super heavy sail, and more efficient sail.
Mm? Okay. So I know that, as an example on the Antares, that the radial taffeta or the X-drive taffeta, is the cut different? I'm guessing it doesn't say it's like an X-drive radial taffeta.
No, the X-drive is not radial. The X-drive, the body, which is called the body, you saw on the previous drawing, is cross-cut.
Okay,
the shape is all control cross-cut, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so a cross-cut, can you explain what a cross-cut is? So that
cross-cut is the panels across from the leech to the laugh. Well, today on the titanium, you can see are the basic panels parallel to the foot.
Yes.
Usually, they use 90 degrees on the leech on Dacron sails.
Okay.
In order to have the fiber direction along the leech.
Okay.
But on this construction, like X-drive and titanium, you don't need too much effort on the direction of the body fibers, because you're going to put all the carbon directions. When you're going to put the structure, which is the X-drive, you're going to put on the low direction.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
So, because. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. So then to summarize, if I'm looking at the X drive versus the radial, the X drive is cross-cut, which means the panels are basically in parallel going up and down. And then the reinforcement is from the aramid fibers or whatever high-tech fibers you're using to cover the load and the stretch on that sail. Okay.
Correct.
Got it. Got it. Mm-hmm. Now I understand. Any other questions anybody has specifically on the different types of sail materials that you can purchase? I mean, this applies not just to UK sails. Every manufacturer has different types of stuff, but the concepts are very specific. The radial is a cross terminology, and cross cuts cross terminology. It's just different types of material that different types of sailmakers may use. Okay, we'll keep moving on then. We'll go to the next topic here, which is getting into the different types of sails. And I think everybody on the call, I'm sure, knows enough about the mainsail, jib, and genoa. And we get into different types of spinnakers, which we'll talk about, whether it be a symmetrical or an asymmetrical spinnaker. And we'll also talk more about Code Zero and on other slides. But what I wanted to ask just everybody on the call, just in general, is who is using a trisail or storm jib? I don't see this very often. You see a lot more, I think, on monohulls. I'm sure cats can have them as well. I typically would roll up my jib and make it really small. But does anybody use trisails or storm jibs on their boat? Want to speak up? Sounds like maybe not. Go ahead, somebody.
No, but
yeah, go ahead, Pedro.
Well, the trisail. Well, none of those Antares catamaran have any trisail. No, nobody have a trisail.
Not that I'm aware of.
Because you have the problem with the trisail is if you have the full button version, you have the Harken or the system on the mast with the cars.
Yeah.
So change, you need an external, another track, basically, for a trisail.
Yeah.
The trisail is like the life jacket. It's always inside and you never use.
Got it.
Except where you cross the ocean and you can sing, can use. The storm ship, yes. Many people use the storm ship.
Yeah.
The storm ship is you can roll the ship. The ship is very small, the Antares 44. It's 20 square meter.
Yeah.
So, and it's high, heavy. We do 9.5 tons.
Yeah.
So I think it's like everybody use on the Antares as a storm sail, right?
That's pretty much. I've only put my jib on a couple times, and I haven't been in a storm that would have been a problem to put it back on. Yeah. But I don't know if anybody actually has purchased a storm jib for their boats. It doesn't sound like it. I thought one or two boats may have had a storm jib, but the reality is I think that on our boats, we use the jib. We just would furl it in to a small little sliver.
I didn't see or I didn't hear on the catamarans have that inventory like trisail, storm ship. On the monohull they have.
Yes.
On the monohull they have more frequently, and also because many monohulls do offshore racing and the ORC rules is mandatory have the trisail at the storm ship, basically for rules.
Okay. Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the trisail is, I never put a trisail. I put once on a race many, many years ago. But very difficult to use for the people, especially in catamaran. Today have the boom too high. I don't know the Antares, but those lagoon, all of that.
Yeah,
you need an elevator to change a sail, right?
I'm sure they wouldn't want that in their marketing clip. You need an elevator to get to their boom, but they are definitely definitely higher up. So let's talk now about the different types of sale cuts that you can have on a main sale, and all three of these are options on the Antares. We have more of a triangle cut, which is for in-mass furling. We have a large roach, and we have a square top main. I think people that would be moving towards a slab reef, which is what I have on my boat, you know, I started off my boat with a large roach. Square tops weren't really, quote unquote, very popular 12 years ago. And then I now have a square top on my boat. Can you talk a little bit about why someone might want to go with a large roach versus a square top? I know that there are people on the call that are thinking about not sure which direction to go. What's your advice, and why would you go with one or the other?
Well, on the full bottom main, the catamaran full bottom main, there are two basic reasons. One is more aesthetic, which is new, modern. And the other is more efficient, because downwind, you have more sail area. And you have more, you use more that area on the head. The only disadvantage have the square top is how to install the connection with the head when you drop the sail for the diagonal button. Well, we have a purchase line inside that make the separation on the head when you drop the sail from the front top card.
Right.
But after that, the square head is much better performance sails, and you have about 5 to 6% more sail area.
Yeah. Well, that's what I understood when I. Yeah, that's what I understood when I went through the analysis for my boat, and I purchased a square top, and I love it. And you know, it definitely. The top battens are tricky, as you said, to get the right approach so that the battens will collapse when you drop it down. Not because they can't stay like this when you store it, and they need to.
It's very hard. Yeah, correct. Yeah,
it's tricky. Yeah, it's tricky to get the right system. There are different systems that exist out there.
There are some systems. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have the in-mass furling version, which you don't have as much of a roach on that sail, but. Why is it that you don't have as much of a roach on a in-mass furling system?
Well, the basic issue with the roller furling main is you put roach, it's more hard to roll the sail in, out, in, it's more material inside the mast. When get old, more difficult, plus the buttons have to pass through the grove on the mast, so it's delicate. Okay. Work nice, but there are a big advantage in comparison with the regular furling main. The problem with the basic furling main is hollow leech, or like a Genoa. And this sails allow us to put a little roach. Not big, but just a little roach. And also with the buttons, you control the last part of the exit, which make the sail more smooth, the exit. The problem with the hollow leech sail is like the Genoa, you have to tie the leech line a lot, and it make a shape like that all the time on the exit, right?
Yeah.
So it's better for the sail. How much? Yeah. And also you have more sail area, about maybe 5%, 6%.
Yeah. I noticed also in this photo, and we'll talk more about it in a minute, but this photo of the in-mass furling has 1, 2, 3, 4 vertical battens. So obviously they're vertical because they have to roll up into the furler.
Correct.
That's why they're vertical. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Well, I make that sail for the Veneto. Yeah.
Oh, you made that sale. Okay. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we made here.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in I Houston, that picture. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that. So you made that sale. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I just saw a question come through, Pedro, from somebody, and they said, are there any problems with the square top and the topping lift interference.
Yeah, true. You have to have the topping lift. Well, today, all the boats have a rigid bank, right?
Yeah.
So,
yes.
But yeah, you have to make sure you have the topping lift, the topping lift on windward side, no?
That's right.
Or you need to drop the sail or reef the sail, take a reef or something like that.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah. And just to add to that.
But you have same problem with the with the regular curve.
That's right.
Regular road with the big road.
That's right. That's right. You have the same problem with either. Another question for Pedro says, any comment on the flat versus round vertical battens for an in-mast furling sail?
We use the flat battens because it's much easier to build this, the way you don't lose the battens. The round battens, some people use the round battens, but it's a little complicated. And it's very difficult to have a button with a rigid side on the leech. We use tapered button for the Antares, and many catamarans, other boats, or roller full in Maine. We use RBS buttons, epoxy buttons with the tapered. So it's soft on the inside and rigid on the leech.
Okay.
So, I saw some round buttons, but it's a little complex.
So your advice would be to not use round battens?
Not if the sail is prepared for that, of course.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Mark, if I could, I'd go ahead. Step further. We got rid of our battens altogether because we found that positioning the sail, one would always have to adjust the boom so that the angle is just right for that batten to go in perfectly vertically. If over time you miss, you know, the wind is stronger, you don't have exactly the right angle, those battens tend to corkscrew around the furling mechanism. Correct. And they create memory. So literally you have a corkscrew batten inside your batten pocket. And I think battens, I mean, you can get a little bit more roach, a little more square area with the battens, but we found it so problematic. We felt, okay, let's just get rid of battens altogether. We can't claim that we have a fully batten mainsail, which is why they typically put vertical battens. But we found the benefit to the battens far outweighs the marketing, you know, the marketing behind it, and now it's truly a lot easier to work with the sail without battens. So that would be our recommendation based on our experience.
All right. This is very good that you said that. I had one fall out and I'm getting ready to go through the hell of putting one in. And if I saw on the forum, somebody said, you don't need battens. I think you're smoking something. So Pedro, yes. I'm not a high performance sailor. We just putz around. What happens if I don't put the battens back in? I mean.
No, well, the leech collapse because it's positive roach.
Say that again.
The leech is positive roach, so we'll collapse the leech. It's gonna flapping all the time.
Ah, okay. So and then if it's flapping, then it's gonna degrade the sail. So
correct.
I'd be better. One of
the thing important is always upwind to roll and unroll the sail. You never roll the sail downwind. Need to be upwind.
All right.
Need to flake in the sail with the wind.
I got pretty cocky with it. I've been rolling up all kinds of directions. Wind one side,
Yeah.
Everybody says these things are nightmares. I'm like, I just rolled up. I don't have any problems. All right. Yeah. No, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Well, this is probably a good segue for Mark and I to have a conversation. And I thought this was humorous. I pulled this. This is obviously a very hotly discussed topic between furling versus slab reef systems. And the good news is It's very specific to the owner and what they want to have out of their boat. There's no right or wrong answer. It's very personal. It's very individual. But I saw this chat online. I was doing some more research trying to get other inputs. And this was pretty humorous. One person said that there was no excuse for a cat to have any sort of a furling mane, maybe a lagoon, but that was it. Then the next person was said, no, there's no excuse for a cat not to have anything but an in-mass furling. Maybe a gunboat will be excluded. So this was this big hot debate online about furling versus slab reef. And I guess what I would say is, just as I mentioned, there is no right or wrong answer. It's very specific to the individuals and your own experiences. While anybody has opinions, myself included and Mark included, the reality is what's good for one, it may not be good for the other. So I'll just say that kind of on the outset. And so what I thought we would do is just talk a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a comment about that. Well, one of the solutions, or one of the solutions the guy from Antares got, in order, because what happened on the catamarans, all the catamarans have big road sails or square of mains. If you want to do furling main with the same size, the sail is going to be critically smaller.
Yes.
Because you can't have any roach practically. You're going to have only maybe 1.5% of roach. So they make a larger boom to compensate the sail area with the full bottom main. Even still smaller than the full bottom main, the roller pool. They put like 1 meter more on the boom,
correct,
or something like that. I remember we changed the model of the main,
yes,
in order to compensate the area, because the main difference is the square meter you have, you carry on, right?
Yes, exactly. And so what Pedro is saying is that on the newer boats, the in-mass furling have a longer boom for the furling mains to try to compensate for the less sail area that you have with the in-mass furling. Other piece to that is, and I know that you're working on this too, is, well, I'll talk about it later, but there is a whole new rig that we're working on for the slab reef, which is a longer boom, taller mast, non-ICW for those that want to have even more sail area, which is what I wish I had on my boat, in particular for light wind performance. But that's a different conversation. But I will talk about it. And so on that note, Mark, do you want to just talk about your experiences with furling from your perspective? I mean, we have this table here, but just feel free to talk about it, and then I'll talk about my experience.
Yeah, and it's good you said that. You know, there's no right or wrong answer. Everyone's experience, illustrates their personal preference. So I do want to say that, although we have in mass, first of all, it was not a choice. The boat came with it. I actually had a contract on another Antares prior to this one, and it had traditional slab reefing. And when I was in discussions with the then current owner, I said, you've got in-mast furling. To me, that should be a deduction in price, not a premium. So I argued against in-mast furling, and I'd say for Catherine and me, shorthanding sailing, it is particularly important. You know, happy wife, happy life. She can completely work the sail inventory, and by that I mean, Maine and Genoa, completely independently. It's absolutely no problem to get the sail out, to get it in, to reef it in infinite number of configurations, and so I know that her comfort level makes me more comfortable. And yes, it's absolutely a sacrifice in performance, but I can't tell you how easy it is to work that sail, not having, separate reefing lines, not have to worry about lazy jacks, not have to worry about, the way the sail is packed, et cetera, et cetera. It's just an incredibly easy sail to work. And the caveat is, of course, until that motor fails and in high winds, and then, you know, you're stuffed. But touch wood, we haven't had that experience.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate that background. The other, yes, I would agree with you as well about it. Really depends on the boat setup and, you know, how things are done. From my perspective, you know, I've sailed both. So I sailed one of the boats up from Florida to Annapolis and back that was furling. And then, of course, I've got a lot of miles on our boat, which is slab reef. I love it. I wouldn't want it any other way. Just like those people that have furling wouldn't want it any other way either. For me, you know, I think when it comes to reefing, we talked about, you know, your partner on board. I find that once we have the reefing line marked, it's single line reefing, the Selden system. It's not complicated at all to put a reef in. I reef at any point of sail. So it's not a big problem. However, it's not as easy for Sarah to put a reef in. Our sail is not complicated, but two lines to deal with, the halyard and the reef line, where she would have an easier time for sure. I know reefing a furling main, so that's definitely a plus. But, you know, there are trade-offs with everything, and, you know, I'm very happy with my slab reef. But, you know, if I had a furling main, I would make myself be happy with that too. So it's, I think the biggest thing that I would mention, and I bring this up only because a friend of mine had this happen on his furling main, is he's never had his motor fail ever, but he has had the sail jam a number of times to where he has to go up the mast to undo it in a seaway. And that is definitely something that you need to be careful about, is the possible jamming. I'm not sure what he did wrong. I think it was the angle of the boom. Maybe it was up more when he was furling it in and it caught or something, but he had it happen a couple of different times. And so that's the one area, not so much the failure of the motor, because there's a motor, but also the jamming could possibly be a problem. I have had an issue on my slab reef when we first got the boat, that it, I had one of the Harken Track screws come unscrewed, and my car couldn't come down. And so we had to go up the mast in the seaway as well. So there's an issue with the slab reef from that perspective. My big key takeaway was I got to be very careful, and I always double check all my bolts going up and down the Harken Track, make sure they have Loctite, and you won't have a problem. But you do need to be aware of that. The biggest fear I have is not being able to reef when I need to reef. And so that's why I'm very anal, even on my boat, to go up and down to keep, make sure I have those things are all tight. Somebody put some notes here. Let's see here. Yeah, so there's definitely, we even see, I mean, obviously with other owners going back and forth about furling versus non-furling. It's a very emotional topic, but the reality is you have choices. Unlike other catamaran builders, you do have a choice. Nobody, interestingly enough, has done an in-boom furler. So that's something that I think is interesting. I looked at that when I was buying my boat, because you get to keep the horizontal battens. But go ahead, Pedro.
Yeah, but I don't know what the probably one of the big problem, if you want to make a boom, furling boom, you have a very ugly angle on the boom in comparison with the mast. I don't know how you can roll the sail with that angle on the boom. It's like 80, it's almost saying leech and left length.
Yeah, I don't know either. So I mean, nobody's done it.
I don't think you can put a roller fully in boom on a rake like that.
Okay, maybe you may not be able to anyway. I mean, that's why it doesn't exist. I just saw what. Go ahead. Sorry, Pedro.
No, that's it. I think that. So
we've talked a little bit about battens. I don't want to go. We're getting low on time. I don't want to burn through too much more about battens, but the idea of battens, whether they're, in this case, this is a slab reef, horizontal battens. The idea is to maintain the sail shape on the leech. Yeah. Anything else that you would add, Pedro, about battens?
No, it's for the batten. It was built to support the roach. You can't, the claw doesn't have enough resistance without the batten. We try many things. Even there are many sails, they try roller battens that you roll on the ships, roller furling battens. It was interesting, but the durability was very, very low. At 1 year, destroy. So, but if you need the exit of the lead, you need to put a support. You know, you have to make a lot of hollow.
Right.
So the material can't stay itself.
Yeah. So we'll keep kind of moving through. We got about 10 more minutes left and we've got a couple more slides. What I wanted to do is I'm going to just mention this to everybody on the call, but at Antares, you have standard sets of sails, which is the main sail of some sort, whether it be for furling or slab. You've got a Genoa and then you've got a Code Zero. And so this is, and then optionally you have the self-tacking jib, which is shown here as well. These are the standard materials that the sails come with. These, in this example, these are all radial cut. Is that correct? Just based on the way they are designed? Okay.
Correct. If you can see the difference on the color, you see it's different on the weight of material. It's a Palmatec for the square main. Have three materials. Have one very heavy between the reef. Here, black, more dark. Then the 18, which is 9 ounces, and the 13, which is about 8 ounces or 7 something. Okay. And this is a good thing on the Palmatec. This material have a lot of Dyneema thread inside, so make very, very durable.
Okay. So the Palmatec is a laminate, correct?
Yes. Yes, okay. It's a cruising laminate from Challenger.
Okay. And then go ahead, sorry.
No. Similar to, we use a CDX also, CDX Pro from Contender. It's similar product, but the Palmatec have Dyneema inside, which is very good.
Okay. And then the Genoa is also Palmatec, same as the main 13.9, which is the weight. So it's a lighter sail. Now, you were mentioning to me that the darker gray areas on the sail are the heavier material.
That is the Palma 13, and the light, the other is a Palma 9.
Palma 9, okay.
And then the name of the material, The very dark thing is the UV protection.
Is UV protection, okay. And then we have the Code Zero / Screecher. We'll talk more about Code Zero and Screechers in a minute, but this is the sail that is the 155P. What is this material, Kotec 155P?
It's a high tenacity polyester, Code Zero, like a spinnaker nylon, 3.8 ounces, 3.1 ounces, and it's really good. And we use for one of the discussion we have with Antares a little bit is how often or with what wind you use the screecher.
Yeah.
We have two screechers. We have the heaviest screecher, which is the X drive, and the lightest screecher, because they said nobody used the screecher on heavy wind.
Yeah.
So that's the version for the lightest screecher, to say something.
Okay, so there are two different versions people can get, and they can modify that based on their needs. So that's one of the things, too, that when you're buying a boat or buying new sails for your boat, you have options. These are the standard options. People will upgrade, change materials. That's typical for sure. Yeah. But what I wanted to do is spend a couple more minutes here, Pedro, on this whole conversation of Code Zero versus Screecher. There's so many different names that people use, and sometimes I notice that they're very confusing. They're not even necessarily interchangeable, because you'll have here, as an example, North Sails. Well, the least upwind is Code Zero, which is what I have on my boat. I had a Screecher, which is more of a Code 55. Now I have a Code Zero. But if you look at incidents, their Code Zero is more upwind. It's completely opposite of what North is saying. Can you talk about the Code Zero versus the Screecher and a little bit more about why it's so confusing?
It's a nice drawing, that one, The Screecher is like a big Genoa. It's hollow leech. have a straight laugh. So then the sale we know as a code zero is a sale with 75% girth of the foot, which is the code zero drawing, right? That's the popular code zero.
Yeah.
Because this comes from the monohulls and the racing rules.
Yeah.
In order to measure a sail like an asymmetric along the boat, must be bigger than 75% the girth, which is that make the girth is the middle measurement, right?
Yeah.
So in the middle point, which you have to make a positive roach and a positive laugh, more like a very close reaching spinnaker. Correct?
Yeah.
Then I start building different sails after that. But the catamaran never use the code zero. They use a screecher because they don't play any rule. They don't race on monohull rules. So they sail very fast, especially the trimaran, like the corsairs, all of that. And they call screecher that sail.
Yeah.
Which is that is a very close reaching, but it's not a code. But today they call code one, code three, code many love put different names. So it's confused. It's confused.
It's very confusing. And I get this question all the time. Yeah. What's a screecher? What's a code zero? What's why all this?
Correct.
It's very confusing.
On all times the screecher is a drifter. That we know many years ago as a drifter. That's the real, the old name on that. But yes, it's confused.
It's confusing. Yeah. So, to at least cut to the chase from an Antares perspective, when the boat comes with a standard code zero, it's similar to this code zero cut that we see.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not a screecher anymore. It's not the code 55. Of sale, it's a code zero.
The screecher is more like the code 55.
Right. Because it used to be.
Yeah, but more hollow leech, even more like a Genoa, big Genoa, like Genoa for light wind.
Yeah, for light wind. So I think a key decision people have to make, and just giving you my experience that I've had, I started my boat with a screecher, like a code 65, somewhere in that range.
Correct.
And it was for light wind, and that's great. And one of the things I noticed is that I was always trying to keep the boat pretty powered up, and it was too light a material, and I blew it out a couple times. So I had a code zero made. I had it made when I was in Auckland. North Sails made it for me, and I had it designed to be a heavier material, just specifically because I don't want to get caught in a 18 knot gust and have it pop out. So it's my favorite sail. I use it all the time because it's a heavier material, but I keep it up a lot longer in lighter winds, and I can get a gust and not have it. It scares Sarah because it loads up a lot. They're hard to furl when they're fully loaded up, but they are great sails for our boat.
But you have a top-down roller furling or a regular roller furling?
A top. It's. I don't know the difference. What's the difference?
Well, it's big different. The top-down start rolling from the head, and the regular one start rolling from the tuck. Yeah, for the code zero, for the spinnaker roller furling, perfectly, you need a top-down.
It's top-down.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's top down. Yeah. So it's been great. Any experience that you have, Mark, you want to share with your sales? You've got a whole big inventory.
Yeah. Well, on the question of the screecher, we had the same experience as you, Mark. We blew out our spinnaker, or not spinnaker, screecher. And Pedro replaced it 2 years ago. That was the first sale that we replaced. We also love it. I actually prefer the screecher to the idea of a code zero because it allows us to point a little bit better. And I've actually been experimenting with a cutter rig where I can have both the Geno and the Screecher up at the same time in super light winds to sail that I can put up in instead. And for, you know, when it gets to 90 degrees or more, we take out the asymmetrical. So that would be the sort of the crossover sail to the zero in your instance.
Thanks, Mark. I just noticed we have a question here I needed to ask you, Pedro. It says, how much luff tension should we be carrying on the Code Zero? Say, for example, at 120 degrees true and 16 knots, how much curve should be seen in the luff?
Well, as soon as we want to go up more upwind, we need the luff more straight possible. That is one of the points, correct?
Yeah.
For the other side, it have a lot of tension. It's very hard for the roller fully to operate it, right?
So yeah.
Need to be. But the sail is designed like the Screecher, or the Code Zero is talking, sorry. Yeah, the Code Zero, if you want to come down or go more deep on the wind, you have to lose a little bit the luff tension, right?
Yeah.
If you want to go more upwind, you need to tighten. Right. Yeah. Most of the Code Zero, even the Code Zero we made, the cable is inside the sail. So the only sail if the cable is outside the sail is the roller full in a spinnaker.
Okay. Otherwise, it's actually inside the sail.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Thank you for that. Thank you, Doug and Margie, for the question. Let's go. We've got one more key area to talk about, and that's on spinnakers. And we have the asymmetrical, symmetrical spinnaker, and then the parasailer type approach, which is almost like asymmetrical with a hole cut in the middle. Do you want to talk about these three different types of sails, Pedro?
Yes. Well, the asymmetrical is on the Antares 120 something square meter. And it's a sail for sail deep. They have a lot of rotation. You can release the tack and the sail have a projection to windward side, helping to go downwind a lot. Or you can tie on the other hull. And since all the catamarans have two hulls, are very, very good for the symmetrical spinnaker, right? Because you don't need any spinnaker pole. You can use the Oxley is the symmetrical spinnaker with this hole inside with the Ventures materials, making the sail much more stable. So you don't need to trim even the sail almost.
Yeah.
So that's the difference with the regular symmetrical.
Yeah.
We're making a lot of symmetricals, standard symmetrical now for the Caribbean, for the Lagoon catamarans, because they like the idea for the symmetrical that go downwind. They put one corner, they use the two holes.
So
even they can reach with those sails.
Right.
The regular symmetrical is coming popular on the catamaran.
Yeah. I know that
Of them with the snaffer, right?
Correct. They're all with the snaffer. Yeah. So anybody want to share your experiences on using asymmetrical spinnakers on your boat? Symmetrical. A quick question before we do that, though. From a performance perspective, let's say I'm sailing anywhere from 150 to 180 degrees apparent. Performance-wise, I keep going back to performance because I like to go fast. Symmetrical versus asymmetrical. What's your opinion? I mean, the sail area. I mean, I would think that asymmetrical might have more area because it's symmetrical, and you might be better off with it versus asymmetrical. But I don't know.
No. Yeah. The symmetrical is you can make on the same area. An area issue. In fact, this Oxley, this asymmetrical with the hole like that are smaller than the asymmetrical.
Correct.
But the thing is, with the asymmetrical, you start sailing very well, 110, 120 degrees to 145 is very, very efficient.
Yeah.
Much efficient than the symmetrical.
Yeah.
But to go 150 to 180, you need the symmetrical for that.
Okay. So go ahead, Mark.
We've had some positive experience at 180, you know, dead down, having a wing-on-wing asymmetrical in creature. That is a balanced sail plan. But as Pedro said, anything deeper than around 140 for us, in fact, is when we put up the parasailer, which is our preferred. I mean, it is as you had taught me, it is a form of asymmetrical sail. Asymmetrical spinnaker, and we just love that. That's our absolute favorite downwind sail.
Yeah. I love it too. I mean, I've owned two parasailers, because I had one that was too small. I got the largest size I could possibly get, and sailing downwind, we had ours up for 2 weeks straight from Galapagos to French Polynesia. Never took it down. We had it up in 25 knots. True. I mean, apparent wind's a lot less than that because you're doing like 9-10 knots, but it was unbelievable. And so Sarah likes it because it's easy. Even with a 15, 20, 30 degree wind shift, it'll swing and almost adjust. It's easy to jibe it. But you know, there's more work in rigging it, as you know, Mark, than an asymmetrical, getting it rigged up with two guys and two sheets. There's some tricks you have to do, but it is a great sail, especially if you're doing lots of miles. It's great. I would like to have an asym on my boat as well, because I'll get more power out of that at, as you mentioned, around 110, 120, 130. That would really power the boat up nicely. So that might be something I'll add at some point. But anyway, that's been good. Anybody have any questions about spinnakers before we go go ahead.
I was going to comment on ASIM. I love it. Lori calls it the bag of terror. We haven't really started cruising. So every time we go out, we're always learning. We force ourselves to take out the bag of terror. And I've really learned that, like with the ASIM, if I let the clue out, the line out longer, the ASIM just rotates around and I could get a direct downwind sail without it doing all kinds of weird things. And then if the wind comes up more at the 90, 180, whatever, I'm not good with those directions, but more on the beam, I just tighten that down and bring the sail to the side. It took us a while to learn how to jibe, but it's really cool to jibe a spinnaker. So it is called the bag of terror for a reason, but if you practice and learn with low wind sails, you pick it up really quick.
Yeah.
Was it your sail day that we had on Annapolis, or was that actually Sorella's sail that we flew?
That was my sail. That sail, okay, by the way, is taking a bath in the Chesapeake, because when I first put it up, Russell taught me how to put it up, but he didn't teach me how to bring it down. And I do, when you bring a sail down, you go into the wind. And it just, the bag wouldn't come down. And finally, I figured I dropped the halyard, which then it came down really fast into the water. And then Russell's like, oh yeah, by the way, just let the lines out. So we learned about the bag of terror, but I think it's very versatile because it can shift to totally behind you, downwind and over, and the fact you can jibe with it versus symmetrical.
It's definitely good. I mean, we were doing 9.5, 10 knots in Annapolis with your ASIM up on Sorella when we were out there doing that sailing class. And that was, we were moving. It was a lot of, I mean, it was a lot though. You got to be careful, no doubt about it. Well, listen, I think we're actually 10 minutes or so over our time. I wanted to, first of all, thank Pedro for taking the time and sharing his wisdom and knowledge with all of us. And I also would like to just open it up with any questions that somebody would have, any other questions that you may have for Pedro about anything dealing with sales or anything, please speak up. Don't be shy.
Yeah, I have one quick question. It's a practical question for an Antares owner who has to make a choice from scratch. And in the debate of performance versus cruising, practically speaking, let's give a concrete example. You're at, I don't know, 60 degrees with true of 12 knots. How much more are you going to get spending that?
Oh, I love that one part.
Cut versus a standard deck rock.
I think
we lost one part.
We lost you there. I think maybe you're go ahead and try that again, Mark.
Okay. For an Antares owner making a decision from scratch.
I think it's his Starlink is going.
Yeah.
He's on Starlink, so we'll see.
Extra, the same cut, just material now. Is a high performance sail going to give you knot wise as opposed to a standard Dacron sail? Are we talking several knots or are we talking?
Okay, so I think I got your question, Mark. I think your Starlink keeps jumping up and down. Pedro, what he's asking is, for the exact same sail, let's just take the Genoa and Maine, using a Dacron or a high-tech material, will you notice a performance difference in the boat with the different types of sail material?
Well, the performance is growing. Dacron have some limitations because you make a cross-cut sail, you have to put a lot of weight on the sail and you have a lot of stretch. Next step, you go with a radial sail on Dacron, which is to the better performance for Dacron. But when you start putting this material, like the cruising laminate or something like that, or X-Drive, the sail is much rigid on the water. So the performance of the boat is much better because the profile keep all the time a good shape. And also you don't need to have a very heavy sail. So that is the difference, you know.
Because to me, much better means maybe 5%. Not every bit counts, right?
But then there is another evaluation, which is the price, right? Because one Dacron sale cost $10, the other cost maybe 20 or 30. It's about the difference you have on price. But the cruising laminate is very close to the Dacron right now on terms of price, which allow a very, very nice sale. Yeah. Those titanium X-Dry is 50, 60% more expensive sale. So you duplicate much more money on the boat, and it's, those sail, like titanium, forget it because it's very fragile sail. It's for a monohull or catamaran for racing. That you want to do one ray, you perform an only weight. X-Drive is excellent sail. It's expensive, but it's very good. And the laminate, the cruising laminate with those Dyneema are very nice or very, very good. So.
We have one more question here, and I actually accidentally stopped sharing. So let me just reshare this. I don't know what happened. And what I want to do is go back over here to this one slide, this one here. And hopefully you guys can see this. Let me just...
That answer, this is cruising laminate is a good answer for us. But I'm got them on like that.
Okay. So the other question, Pedro, came from someone who is currently buying a new Antares, and he is looking at what would your recommendation be for just the overall best type of sail. And I know that you mentioned already what the material was. Let me try to find that slide. Here we go. The Palmatec 13.9 is the standard, the Palmatec for the new boats. But if somebody wanted to, their question is the X-Drive that much better, or is it going to last longer? What's your recommendation on someone that would like to have the longest lasting sail? I'm sure not a Dacron sail, because that'll last longer.
No, the Palmatec Royal,
So that's the material that the boats come with as standard, is the Palmatec.
Because they have a lot of, they put a lot of Dyneema inside. It's really good.
Yeah. And somebody else said too that it's difficult to respond to the question of longevity, because it all depends on how you use the sail, how you store the sail. Right. Let's just talk about that real quickly. Those that are still here, it's my experience, especially since I live in the tropics, are laminates in particular can be harder to clean when they get mildewy. They can be subject to mildew. I know that there's treatment, but I have north sails on my boat, and I actually have a brand new set of sails that I haven't hung yet on my boat, because I'm waiting until I'm going to spend more time on the water because of mildew and moisture.
All right.
And so I've noticed that the moisture and humidity seem to be harder on laminate sails. And so, and it also is a function of how much sailing do you have. So I had about 30,000 miles of sail of 35,000 miles of water under the keel on one set of sails before I had to get new ones. And so I would use them a lot, but they did delaminate. And so how do you take care of sails, Pedro, that are laminates? Do you always take them down if you're not using the boat, or what do you recommend?
Yeah, when I use the boat, it's better to, absolutely.
I mean, it's so difficult, because as cruisers, it's a pain in the butt to take the main down, put it back on. No,
main is impossible, Mm-hmm.
It's not impossible, more so, but I don't have my main on my boat right now, because I don't want to leave it up.
Correct. The Genoa need to drop when you're not using for a season, that you're out of the boat. It's better you drop the sail, you wash with fresh water.
Okay.
After you do a large, long distance sailing, on the ocean, when you finish, wash the sail, make sure it's good, it's a full button main, make sure it's flake okay on the boom. So all those tricky things, Also, check the button tension frequently, at least after sailing long distance, all those things. Also check the buttons are okay, the card, the all the components, attachments. So,
well, one of the things that was recommended to me by a sailmaker is that I should ease off the batten tension. So you would agree with that?
Yes. Especially when you leave the sail down a lot of time.
Okay.
Because with the temperature, the cell, the material, shrink or expand, change a little bit. It's different with the button. Yeah, it's better to lose the tension. Need to check the tension frequently. Even say, okay, I go to the sailing from here to the Caribbean after the summer or whatever. Need to check the tension of the button because
that goes back to
durability.
Right. So that goes back to the conversation of furling versus slab reef. I mean, there is more maintenance or more things you have to do with battens to at least be aware of it than you would with a vertical batten or a vertical batten sail. Okay. Any other?
You have less problem because our vertical battens are short, so you don't have much problem with the tension. But be careful with the tension of the higher, not leave the sail inside the roller fulling with a lot of tension.
Oh, don't have a lot of tension when you furl it.
Yeah, when you leave the boat, right?
Yeah.
But then you have to remember put the tension back.
How do you do that? I mean, why is that? And anybody that has a furling main can talk about that. So what you're saying is, when you store your furling main, don't keep it under a lot of tension.
Yeah.
Keep it loosely furled.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Do you do that, Mark Solari, on your boat?
No, we don't. No, and I wasn't aware of that either. I mean, we don't have the battens, as I said, the vertical battens, we've removed them. But in terms of furling tension, I always thought, having sufficient tension means that it's more compact in the furler, and therefore it lies flatter on itself, and that's the better option. I wasn't aware of actually.
Exactly, I thought you get it nice and snug and tight, so it gets in there, so it doesn't take as much room. Interesting. Okay.
So news for us, but we definitely take it down like during the summer season when we weren't cruising. It was taken down, and it was pretty easy job to do. So,
all right. Well, anybody have any other questions while we have Pedro? Otherwise, we will call it a wrap. Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Ohana, Dave.
Pedro, do you have any instructions for how to install those battens on the website or something in Mass Furling?
I have the instructions. I'm not pretty sure it should be on the UK Sailmaker website. But yes,
we have the instructions. It's like a long Velcro strip that goes down. But I think there's, when it goes up, there's something that should bounce.
I have the instructions. I have the instruction, but I'm not pretty sure it's on the website.
It's like I don't really need instructions. If I saw a visual of how it looked inside, how it put together.
Yeah, the Velcro loop. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You need a button pusher for that. A small button to push the webbing inside.
Okay, and I was using a chopstick, but something like that. But all right.
It's very nice. Yeah, you need a push button. Yeah.
All right. Could you send that to Mark and he can forward
it? Yes.
That'd be very nice. Thank you.
Yes. And I want to check on the website because I believe it's on the website, but I don't know. It's an encyclopedia of sales of UK, probably there. I know the drawing is in some place. I have the file, so I can send to Mark.
If you find it good,
that'd be great.
All right. We'll send you, Pedro. To you.
Okay. Anybody else? Any other questions?
No. Hey, Mark.
Oh, hey, guys.
We don't have a question. We just wanted to share that for those in the club of having blown out a sail and wanting to do something with it, our Screecher has now become this really nice bag we had made from a friend of ours. So we're going to use as much. So Pedro, your sales are not going to waste. We don't know how many we're going to make, and we won't charge as much as sail bags does. Those are expensive.
Okay.
So
that's, well, that's funny.
Making lemonade out of lemons, as it were. So
okay. I'll take one of those for Christmas.
Well, yes, Elizabeth and Alan want one. Yep. We'll start taking one.
I just kept the piece and now I know what to do with it. I was going to repurpose as you know, what do you call it? Repair material, but I like your bags.
Get out the sale right. Yep. We have someone else who's better at it.
We don't have a sale right yet.
That's funny. Alan, all right, everyone.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot, Pedro. You're welcome to go, Pedro. We might stay around.
Thank you for the invitation. And if you want to see another time, do another time. No problem. We are here to have you out, guys.
All right. Thank you, Pedro. Have a nice, nice evening.
All right. Have a good sailing, guys.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.